Hey everyone, Farmington Mayor Nate Duckett. It's April 1st, it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and with us today is the Executive Director of Sexual Assault Services of Northwest New Mexico, Ileana Butler. We're going to be talking about the services provided there at SAS, as well as fundraising opportunities and how you can get involved. Everyone, welcome to the Mayor's Table. Happy April to everybody out there in the Four Corners and across the United States who are tuning in to the Mayor's Table. We have a special guest today with us, and that is Ileana Butler, who's the Executive Director of Sexual Assault Services in Northwest New Mexico.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, we do a lot of work as far as the City of Farmington and SAS, as we call you for short,
yes.
With all the work that you do. And so I thought it'd be a great opportunity to highlight kind of your work that you all are doing there and how important it is to this area. Give you time to talk a little bit about the history, of course, and things that are coming up, because I know you're very much ingrained in the fabric of fundraising events and the fun things that we do to help highlight our health and social service groups.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a good month. As you mentioned, April, it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So this is a great way to kick it off.
It's a perfect timing.
It is.
Yeah. And you're wearing teal.
Teal,
it looks like.
My ribbon.
Yes.
And I'll hand you an honorary teal ribbon.
All right. Very nice. So tell me about the teal and tell me about what this ribbon means.
Well, I think most people know that probably every issue out there has a color.
Sure.
A lot of them, very common colors, pink for October and Breast Cancer Awareness Month. October is also Domestic Violence Awareness Month. They have a purple ribbon. So for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, teal is our color.
Very nice. Yeah. Well, I think it's important to highlight the work that's going on because of the number of individuals, at least that I've known in my life, who have suffered from sexual assaults.
Mm-hmm.
And I know all of us probably have that shared component to some degree. And it's a very prevalent problem, and certainly one that we would like to see reduced in our community.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about you first.
Okay,
let's talk about that. Ileana. Ileana, right. How long have you been here in Farmington?
Well, in Farmington, I moved to Farmington in 1996. It was the end of my undergraduate degree from Fort Lewis College.
All right.
So kind of a natural transition down from Durango to Farmington. I actually did my last practicum placement, which when you're in my degree is in sociology and human services for my undergrad. And so I moved down here and I did my practicum internship time at Family Crisis Center, actually. Worked in the women's shelter and at the office, helping with groups and just learning, you know, the human services aspect hands on.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did you grow up in Durango?
I did not. I grew up in, that's a longish story, but quick story is I was born in Minnesota in a blizzard.
Wow.
My dad's from Texas and went, no, we're not doing that again.
I'm gonna stay in this mess.
So we moved to Colorado to Denver. So I grew up in Denver.
I did too.
Did you too?
I did. Okay. North Glen.
Okay. I was by DU, like.
Oh, you were down
central,
there. Yeah, down there.
In
yeah.
Denver. But in my late junior high and then started high school, we moved to Boulder.
Okay.
So I graduated from Boulder High.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Fort Lewis. I've got a kiddo at Fort Lewis. So.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
What year?
She's in her last year, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. She's doing her student teaching right now. So, but yeah, Fort Lewis has been a great experience. And yeah. I encourage folks when they're looking at universities and places to go to look nearby. I mean, Fort Lewis is our closest four-year institution. And
yeah.
It is a fantastic campus. And I know she's really enjoyed her time there.
Yeah. I apparently didn't want to leave because it took me 5.5 years to graduate. Not because I didn't know what I was doing, but I had two majors and a minor in it. That just took a while.
Well, it's just a fun little town.
I loved
what's the rush
college.
To get out of there?
Exactly. and for me, you know, being, it's kind of funny. Both my parents are social workers, and so it's kind of a gene in our family. And so I went as further away as possible from home without being out of state.
Right.
Yeah. So
went to the corner.
Came to yep, came to the corner.
Well, that's a good corner.
Yeah.
I'm kind of biased, though. But well, great. Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of SAS.
Sure. So this is our 20th anniversary, which also I'm really happy to be on about for this year. And so in two, excuse me, in 2003, you're making me go way back. The state legislature of New Mexico, with a lot of advocacy through our statewide coalition, it's the Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs, recognized that the state as a whole needed more rape crisis centers for survivors to be seen at. So the both the SANE, sexual assault nurse examiners, and rape crisis advocacy really existed in the I-25 corridor, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Las Cruces,
right,
that area. And so folks from all around the state that lived more rural either didn't have a place to go for help or they were driving.
Yeah.
Particularly families and children were driving to Albuquerque to be seen by a program there. And that's a lot of, besides the trauma that families and survivors experience because of the assault, then like there was not a place for them to land and really get support.
Sure.
So the legislature in 2003 allocated more money to help start programs in rural parts of the state. So I was finishing my master's in social work at the time, and a classmate of mine who worked at Farmington PD said, "Hey, Ileana, I just was at this meeting and they're talking about, you know, starting SANE and rape crisis advocacy here in Farmington. You should check into it and go apply." So I went, "Oh, that I'm curious. That's interesting." So I applied. And at the time, kind of circling back into Family Crisis Center, that was the organization chosen to be the fiscal agent for the funds that were coming in because they had to go to a nonprofit.
Right.
And we weren't a thing yet, right? SAS didn't even have a name at the time. So when I was hired, I sort of sat at a desk at FCC and worked with OPAL and said, what do I do? Like, I didn't have a pen, let alone a computer. Like, we didn't have anything at the time. And so we really started from the ground up. And
you've been there from the very beginning.
Pretty much the very beginning.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
OPAL was there in the very beginning.
Yeah. There's a nurse. In fact, I shared some photos with your crew that they'll show. Her name is Lori Stone. And she was the person tasked through San Juan Regional Medical Center to help get SANE going. And the decision at the time was not to have SANE live at the hospital, but to have it be community-based. So SANE programs can either be at hospitals or they can be community-based, which is what we are now. And she got help from staff at a couple other agencies, Child Haven, Family Crisis Center, Daybreak Center at the time, which is now Desert View Family Counseling.
Okay.
So we've all been around a long time. But they really assisted her in applying for some initial funding. And so when that came, the flow through was Family Crisis Center. So they were our fiscal agent for the first 2 years. And so during that time, as we were establishing the programs and hiring just a few staff, we had a few nurses, and I was working on our 501c3. So in that first 2 years, worked with an attorney, got our 501c3 established. And so that was in 2004 to 2006. In July 1, 2006, we officially separated from the fiscal agent and became Sexual Assault
entity.
Services.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and you've grown since then.
We have. We just kept growing.
Yeah.
We're still growing. So we started with the two core programs, SANE, which a lot of people just really, that's what they know us as, the sexual assault nurse exam provider, and rape crisis advocacy. But over the years, we've added a therapy department. We have a really robust therapy department. We do a lot of community education, outreach, and prevention. So that's kind of its own department. And then about 10 years ago, we started services in Gallup. So we have a satellite office in Gallup, and they do all those things I just mentioned, except for SANE. The SANE program has been offered through Gallup Indian Medical Center for quite some years. And recently, our next growth phase now is we are going to open a community-based SANE program in Gallup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talk about the community education part of it. When you talk about prevention and what all does that entail?
So there's two aspects to community work. One is awareness and education about who we are, how to access services, and sort of just basic 101, what's sexual assault, what's sexual abuse, red flags. We do a lot of work around preventing child sexual abuse and education. So there's that component. True prevention, which we can call primary prevention of sexual assault and child abuse, involves multiple sessions over time with the same group of people, with the end goal of preventing it from happening or preventing a reoccurrence. And sure. So most of our work right now is in schools.
That's what I was mm-hmm. wondering. Schools, daycares,
yeah,
places like that.
Right. So we have three programs that we offer. The early education one is called Care for Kids. We do it mostly in daycare settings. We're talking with school districts, and we have been for a lot of years. Sometimes we're in there, and sometimes we're not, like kindergarten, first grade level. And it is working with children around recognizing more things around what their boundaries are, what are healthy boundaries versus what are, because when we're talking about child sexual abuse, it gets really touchy. Child sexual abuse doesn't start out scary and bad. It can, you know, there's this grooming process, and so it's very confusing. So that program does help children with boundaries and learning around correct name for their private parts. That's a huge red flag, or a huge risk factor for children. If they're not using the correct name for their body parts, child sexual abuse can get missed, even by adults that they're telling, because they're using terms that...
they don't know what it means. Right.
So that program really involves the adults, because it is adults' responsibility to prevent child abuse and child sexual abuse. So
for these educators or the individuals at daycare, they're looking, you're trying to educate them on signs to look for.
To look for, and the parents also know that their children are going through this program, mm-hmm. and then they get take-home sheets. So they can then help reinforce, and it gives parents language on how to talk to their kids about safety and that they're a safe person to talk to. It helps educate parents about how and why to use correct names for body parts and all those things. It's really, really crucial. Mm-hmm. So that's our early childhood program. We have a junior high and high school curriculums. For junior high, we do what's called safe dates, and we were doing that in high schools for a long time. We're in Aztec, Bloomfield, Farmington, CCSD, and then McKinley County schools also, and lots of outliers. We're in chapter houses and boarding schools.
It's a big dorms. Endeavor.
It's a huge endeavor.
Are there grants involved in that program?
There are, yeah, prevention, unfortunately, a lot of folks know when you're trying to prevent anything, whether it's San Juan County Partnership working on alcohol prevention or smoking cessation and all those things, prevention funding has in the past tended to be the funding that's like goes first when you're short.
Sure.
So we're mostly funded by the Department of Health through the CDC's initiatives around rape prevention education to do our prevention work. And we're hoping to grow that because we usually have about 3 full-time staff working in the prevention department, and it's not enough. They do an incredible job by covering all the schools and doing what we do, but we'd love to do more. So the Safe Dates does kind of the junior high level, and then we developed kind of combining some national research-based programs. We call it ALR, Ask, Listen, Respect, and it's... Those are the instructions, right? You ask someone for permission, whatever it is.
Right.
You listen to their answer, and then you respect what that is. So they build, it all builds on itself over time. And it's been really neat. We've been doing prevention work in the schools since about 2007, 2008. And over all those years, because we go in and in and in, those kids, once we get into their high schools, they go, oh yeah, I remember you, or I remember that program. And so that's the overtime primary prevention and educating the community.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, just giving people the tools and the knowledge and the know-how, recognizing the signs, knowing what's proper and what's not proper. And of course, the component that's most important is respecting other people.
Right.
Just respecting your fellow humans and giving them the dignity that they deserve and not violating that. Yeah. Eliana, over the years that you've been involved, at the issue of sexual assault, has it grown? It's just what's on my mind, and yeah. I'm sure people listening, because you're at the front lines of this. What are you seeing happening?
Really interesting. We did our own sort of internal study several years ago now about taking a look at the numbers and. Particularly when it comes to SANE exams. So we're really getting in at the acute phase of right after somebody's experienced a sexual assault, and what do those numbers look like? For 20 years, we have averaged around between 120 and 130 scene exams a year.
Okay.
It's gone up and it's gone down, but that has been our average for the whole entire time. And so in terms of a prevalence, I would say it's probably stayed fairly consistent.
Interesting.
Which is unfortunate because we really would like to see those numbers drop. But at the same time, because people know there's a place to go and they can come forward, we're happy that, like, on years where we have numbers go up or someone says, I never knew I would need you or my family member, but you're there for us. And so I think what it tells me is, unfortunately, it's something that hasn't gone away. It's not gone down, but it's more accepted for people, survivors, to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's safer to talk about. Not completely all the time. You know, a few years ago, when the Me Too movement really brought a lot of awareness to the issue, a lot of people were coming forward. And those are not new cases. Those are folks who experienced a sexual assault years ago and never knew where to go or who to talk to about it. And
right.
So at the time people are talking about, oh my gosh, there's this increase. It's not an increase. It's that this has been happening for a long time. And there's so many variables, culture, how people think around relationships, what's acceptable, what's not. There's so many factors. It's really hard to put a nail in it and figure out what the solution is. So we just keep working toward that. Mm-hmm.
So many of these issues that we face on this level, there's not solutions per se. People make bad choices. And it happens every day. Mm-hmm. And some choices are worse than others. But I think the point of getting in when we're kids and talking about these things, what is and what isn't appropriate, and reinforcing that as you all are doing in that education series, I think has to help. Because it allows people to know, one, this is my body, this is my choice, and I'm asking for dignity and respect. And if that's violated, I know there's somebody I can talk to. And that person hopefully has gone through the same similar programs and, this is the choice that I made and now I have to live with that. But there's a lot of partnerships I would imagine partners Assess works with through this process, Farmington Police being one,
mm-hmm.
but also in a situation where a victim is, they don't want to go home. They need somewhere safe to be. Which organizations do you partner with on that end?
Do you have your own? We don't. We've explored that over the years. We don't have a shelter. I think that's what you're talking about. We do partner with Family Crisis Center. They have the women's, it's not just the women's shelter. It's a survivor shelter.
Right. And they've just expanded.
They have. Yeah. There's New Beginnings here. Shelter out in Shiprock is now reopened. So, and across the Four Corners, I mean, there's a lot of shelters that will also take sexual assault survivors because if the person's experiencing domestic violence or sexual assault by their partner, that all goes hand in hand, right? Those are very sister similar issues. But we also have emergency funding available to us through a couple different sources that we can house folks in hotels.
Okay.
We can help them move. We repair bills, all sorts of different things that are affected through emergency funds, we can help them access for safety. And it's really all around keeping people safe.
Well, and in that context, I mean, none of these organizations work within a vacuum. It takes, the kind of the comprehensive healthcare approach to help individuals, A, confront the issue and B, get through the issue in many ways. So, interesting.
We really look at it as where are all the tables we need to sit at? And it can be housing. It can be, it's mental health. It's, we have a multidisciplinary team through Child Haven, and that does bring all together all the different law enforcement jurisdictions, the DA's office, the providers, whether it's mental health, us, the hospital, I mean, the schools, everyone really does have a place at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then we try to make sure that we're in spaces where we can constantly bring up this issue.
Sure. Mm-hmm. When you talk about funding, obviously you're getting funding from the CDC, from state and federal dollars. Also, I know through, I think through our HUD dollars, the CDBG funds, mm-hmm. we also provide some of that. And a lot of times there are, you know, there's requirements for where that money can and can't go. And then there's the money that's raised through fundraising, and that money you have a little bit more flexibility with on how you get to use it.
Yes.
And it's very important. Those are very important dollars.
Those unrestricted funds is what we call them. Yeah. Absolutely. Our grant funding is the bulk of our funding for services, and we have over 20 funding sources, but they all come with requirements, which are really important. It helps us track. It helps meet those grant requirements to make sure we're providing the best practice when it comes to serving survivors, whether it's through the therapy department or advocacy or SANE. It's all very crucial, but these unrestricted funds through fundraising help us do things when a survivor has a need that really doesn't fit in with the traditional sources that we can help with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how we raise those unrestricted funds.
Okay.
And I have a great little flyer here.
Yeah, you do.
Because this is coming up on Saturday, April 6th. We can put this kind of bigger on the screen, but it's the Sassy Tortoise and Hare 5K, 10K run and walk. This will be starting at Lock Street Eats in downtown Farmington. Oh, we also have the 1 mile stroller roll.
Stroller roll, yes.
That's so good to know.
You're not up for the 5K. The stroller roll is great, and you don't have to have a stroller with you.
Yeah. you can register for this at www.runningguru.com and search Sassy on there. Mm-hmm. But those proceeds benefit Sexual Assault Services of Northwest New Mexico. Lots of great sponsors on here. We have a fantastic and very giving group of organizations that, you know, I can't praise enough, and any of these fundraising opportunities, just to say thank you to them for their support.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have this often the same sponsors every year, which is really nice. They're so committed to the work that we do. And this year, this is our 12th run, not quite right in a row because of the COVID years, mm-hmm. but it is our 12th run. And this year we're partnering with Lock Street Eats. So folks who've done this with us before, the last several years we've been downtown at Orchard Park, and that's where we stage it. Lock Street, hopefully you all know, but that's owned by the folks that own Cottonwood Clinical
sure.
Services.
Yep.
And they're really committed to mental health in the community. And so I think this is going to be a really neat venue. They have the food trucks.
It's a great venue.
Child's play area. So it's also helping us make this easier because it's all staff and board run.
Sure.
So by hosting it there, we're tweaking the route just a little bit to make it start and end there. But I'm really happy to have this partnership with them.
Well, I'm glad you are too. I'd like to highlight our privately owned local businesses.
Yeah.
You know, we want them to be successful, and I know they've put a lot of money into that facility, and we've used it a few times for different events, and it really works out well. So
yeah.
That'll be great. So where is the route for the fun run?
Well, it'll be in and around downtown.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when we were staging it at Orchard Park, we had a route. I couldn't even tell you the route because it goes all up and around, like up to Auburn.
Okay.
That's Apache. Up in and around the neighborhoods and back around. And so we'll still incorporate part of Main Street because we also like that visibility to be along Main. And
sure.
the businesses on Main help sponsor and help support it. So I will be getting the new route up on the website soon. It's not
wonderful.
Quite done yet.
Yeah. Well, I think anybody who's interested in obviously supporting SAS, but it's a great event to get outside. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the perfect mornings. This morning was beautiful,
yes.
by the way. Just loved the blue skies or when they're out. But yeah, get out there and support SAS. And that's just one of a couple of events that you're doing here in the month of April. What else do we have going on?
So this is our second year of doing Paint the Town Teal. Actually, our Gallup staff have been doing this for a couple of years where we have a painter who will go to various businesses, whoever wants a teal ribbon. So they're pretty thick, you know, large teal ribbons like this. And
right.
the window fronts, they look a lot like our lapel pins. And the businesses just do a small donation if they can. But we really just want the teal ribbons all over town.
Right.
Yep. And so you'll see those downtown along with probably the run poster and some other information about just SAS in general to, again, bring awareness to the issue. And along the same lines, we also have law enforcement, so FPD and Sheriff's Office in particular, wearing the lapel pins all month and then putting larger ribbons that they, I think they use a rubber band, tie it to their car, to their patrol cars.
Okay.
And help bring, just have that visibility all around and support.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if people are interested in making that donation or getting a ribbon painted on their windows, where do they go?
They can call our office, which I believe will be up on the screen, to the number, but it's 325-2805.
Okay.
And they can just let the gal that answers the phone know that their business is interested, and we'll add them to the list. And then our painter, she will contact them. And the beginning, well, actually, this is April 1st, so actually they're starting. And it's not too late. So even though the month has started, we will paint ribbons all month long. And from last year, there are still some up, which is really neat.
All right.
Yeah.
When you have stuff going on in Gallup as well, so our friends who are there, it looks like a month, 8 to 10 events going on in that area. But at the end of this month, I mean, what do you see as success at the end of the month of April? And you guys kind of debrief and talk about things. What looks like success for SAS?
That's a really good question. I get asked that a lot in grant reports. So I'm thinking, what do I put in a grant report? But that tends to be more around success in accessibility to programs. So from April, often we actually see more calls and more inquiries about what we do, particularly for the therapy department. The therapy department, folks who enter into therapy don't have to have experienced a recent assault. We always refer folks after they've had a SANE exam and spoken with an advocate more immediately. But we have survivors in our therapy services that for 20 years didn't tell somebody what happened to them and then hear about what we do. And then they call to get that support. And so for me, those are the kind of stories that are successful, even if it's one person who went, wow, I didn't know there was a place to go. And we hope that after all these years of doing all the things that we do, people are aware, but still some people aren't.
Sure.
And so there's that. We also, and I don't know yet, but throughout the month, we'll start getting donations. There'll be groups of people, high school students. We work really closely with San Juan College. They often do some kind of donation. Like last year, they donated, I can't even tell you, hundreds of stuffed animals for us to be able to give out during SANE exams.
Sure.
And so when people come together and really care about an issue, and then whatever they decide to do, whether it's clothing, stuffed animals, blankets, food, non-perishable food. I mean, we take all those donations all the time, but we tend to see a lot of more of that in the awareness month, which is why we try to make sure we're out there doing things.
Sure.
To have, because people want to make a difference.
I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. On that note, I mean, volunteer opportunities that exist with SAS, what does that look like? And are you looking for example, volunteers for next weekend's run? Or this weekend's run?
This weekend's run. I think we're good on volunteers. People can always call, and I can talk to them about what they're interested in. We have it kind of down now, which is nice.
Good.
But it's a good, I won't say easy, but we've figured it out, like how to keep it going. Other ways to volunteer, though, some people in the community may have been or remember that we used to have a volunteer advocate program. So we used a lot more volunteers in our probably first 15 years of services, where it was volunteer advocates went through a really intense training to be able to provide that advocacy at the time of a SANE exam. Over time, we shifted that to all staff advocates, and that really had to do with funding increases, which has been great. But we are currently looking at like the next, not 20 years, I won't be around in 20 years, but like the next 1 to 3 years of growth, and hoping to start a fundraising committee that of people in the community that will kind of work hand in hand with me and the board.
So kind of like a foundation for SAS?
Maybe. We might be getting there. For now, we're looking for folks who want to just be regularly involved in fundraising.
Okay.
And what that looks like. So we talked a little earlier offline. We're not ready quite yet to say what our bigger event is. We'll hopefully for this year. But we need folks because in the community who like to raise funds, like to plan events, They like to decorate. Like, whoever decorated your studios, who is that? And they can come join my committee.
Sure.
You know, that kind of thing. So that's a really great way for folks to give back, too. The board of directors is a volunteer board, and we are looking for board members. So okay. they could, if you have a particular skill, CPA, attorney, fundraising.
Yeah.
That's a really great way to volunteer, or like I said, join the committee. And then we're developing some legacy giving, and that's the next phase of growth for the organization too. As being basically considered a founder of the organization, it's my job to take, okay, what's going to keep us around the next 20 years, 50 years as we keep going. So legacy giving, regular donations. We have some really neat ways that people can easily donate to the organization. One of them is recently, I didn't know we could do this until recently, Smith's and probably all the other grocery stores have a program. Theirs is called Inspiring Donations. You can now enter your Smith's rewards number, whatever the number
sure.
when we check out.
Yep.
But then go online and attach our organization to your number, and then Smith's donates a percentage of your purchase back to SAS. So it doesn't cost us anything. So that's super easy to do. We also have, you know, one-time giving, monthly giving, but we also have a roundup program where people can enter their credit card numbers into our donation platform. And you can tell the system, I want to donate up to $20 a month to SAS, and it automatically rounds up your credit card purchases. And so at the end of the month, if you've hit $15.59, you'll get a charge for that amount, and then we'll get that donation. So another really easy, kind of don't have to think about it, way to give back to the community. And you just set it up and you're done.
It's amazing all the ways that they've been able to tie into that now. And it does make it easy.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's your service, it's your time, it's a monetary donation. I mean, it's just very much welcomed.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Eliana, I don't have any other questions per se. I know you've got an event coming up here in December, I believe.
We did, years ago, excuse me, we did martinis and mistletoe. It's looked different, but this last December we did it, and it was great. It was at the Courtyard Marriott. A lot of people came. We had a band, the Zia Chicks came and performed. We had raffle prizes, and all themed around Christmas and the holiday season and giving back. And so we'll probably do that again. That was fun. And so these are all the things that I'd love to add to, but we need the fundraising committee. So I think if you're listening and you really are into fundraising,
this
call
would be
me.
A great
we'll
opportunity
talk.
For
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Well, and for a great cause. And, you know, all of these dollars are going back into our community. They're going back into individuals who have been victims of these crimes. And it's a long process from start to finish when these things happen. And we need to wrap our arms around those folks. And SAS is doing a great job in their work.
Thank you. You know, just circling back into some numbers I didn't hit on earlier, a lot of people ask me, where do we sit in the state when it comes to services? We talked about our SANE numbers, but when we run it and compare ourselves to the rest of the state, we tend to be the third or fourth highest in the state in terms of the number of survivors that we serve.
Really?
And that can be shocking for people.
Yeah.
That also hasn't changed in 20 years that we've been doing this.
We're a big region too, so I always, you know, people ask me questions about why there's so many Farmington police officers. Well, it's because there's 300,000 people who utilize Farmington for service and business, and I would imagine that also applies to what SAS is doing as well.
That is so true. I mean, and we work with all 11 or 12 law enforcement agencies in this whole region, and because we serve San Juan and McKinley County, and we actually outreach and do a lot of work up to Dulce in the Hickory Apache Nation.
Okay.
We provide services in Shiprock, and so we are absolutely seeing survivors from all those areas because we're that hub here.
Yeah. Well, Eliana, thank you for having the vision and the know-how. I'm sure it's been a big, you know, growing process for you as well to start from the ground floor of bringing this type of service to the Four Corners and now seeing it, you know, in all the different areas that you're able to help our community. Thank you for that and your board and staff and everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I wish you luck here in the SAS Tortoise and Hare Road.
I appreciate it. Yeah. You going to come walk maybe?
I would love to come walk. I have an anniversary that weekend. I don't know what's going to happen yet.
You
so
were saying.
Maybe. We could start our anniversary weekend like that.
There you go. Sounds
good. Very good. Well, thank you all for joining us here today. Keep SAS in mind when it comes to your time and opportunities to give. We appreciate the partnership that they've offered, that they offer through Farmington Police Department, all the different law enforcement agencies, and certainly for those individuals who have been victims and have needed their services. We just really appreciate it. So thank you for joining us on this Mayor's Table, and we'll see you here next time.